Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sophie.
I'm Yelly.
And this is She's All Fat,
the podcast for fat positivity, radical self-love, and chill vibes only.
Now in our final season.
In this episode, we're covering late night comedy writer and fat icon Kristen Bartlett. But first, our news corner. Okay, mail alert.
We've opened a Google form for you, our beloved Fatmily members, to write little notes of love to this fat community that you have built. We'll be reading and posting your letters all season long.
Speaking of, we have a very special letter from Hannah. I've listened to She's All Fat since the very beginning, and every episode has been the absolute best. I feel a sense of comfort and joy and learning every time I tune in. I've always been so eager to hear new episodes, and I'm genuinely devastated that the show will end soon. The episode I'll never forget is when Sophie chatted with her mom. It was so beautiful and raw and emotional, and it really meant a lot to me. All I can say is thank you for producing such an important podcast, and I will never forget how each episode made me feel. Love to you all, Caitlin, aka Hannah.
Thank you, Caitlin, aka Hannah. This was such a nice letter. That episode was really important to me too. First of all, because it was my first episode on my own. And second of all, because it was an episode I really wanted to do, and it felt really emotional and important to me too. So I'm really, really glad it landed with you. That means a lot to me that that episode is out there living in your heart, just like it lives in mine.
That one's one of my favorites as well.
I'm so glad. Thank you so much for writing, Caitlin. This kind of thing makes me feel so happy. I can be kind of in my own silo here, especially since I've been off social for a little bit. And the show is so important to me, and it makes me so happy to hear that it's important to you. So thank you for writing in. And please check the show notes to write your love letter to the Fatmily. I love you guys so much. Okay, Fatmily, you know the spiel by now. It's your last chance to join our Patreon. The money from this season will be used to maintain our site and ensure you can listen to the pod long after our finale.
When you join our Patreon at Team Paisley Mumu or above, that's $7 a month. You get access to our legendary patron-only Facebook group where people are talking about trendy plus-size recommendations, movies, and yoga.
You'll also get a bonus minisode every Friday. This season, we're doing something new and exciting for these minis.
That's right. We're doing a Big Sister mailbag. Every week, we're taking your questions about topics like dating and work and answering like the big sisters we both are.
This week, Yelly and I are answering your questions about jobs. Jobs. They suck.
Jobs.
Stick around to the end of the episode for a sneak preview.
In conclusion, now's the perfect time to go to patreon.com/she'sallfatpod and make a pledge to help your fave fatties and future Fatmily members.
That's all our news for this week. Now here's the episode. Okay, I am here, Fatmily, with 5-time Emmy-nominated writer and performer Kristen Bartlett, who you might know from the Fat People Have Head sketch on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee and many other things. These days, Kristen is a co-head writer on Full Frontal, and we're going to talk about how to fatten up the writer's room. But first, can you tell us a little bit about you and your connection to fat justice?
Well, I'm just fat. That's my connection. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. Yes. Yeah, I think I've always been fat. And so my connection to this world has been like through learning to accept myself and
hopefully helping other people do the same. That's what it is.
Yes. Okay, let's get into the meat of it, because you have written on SNL and now you write on Full Frontal. You're like co-head writer. Those are pretty big deals in the TV world, writing in that position and on that show. I obviously am not a TV writer yet, but I did a lot of sketch and improv in college, and then I did a lot of internships in TV world before I started doing more journalism stuff. And I'm like really curious to hear from you as somebody who presumably did all that stuff younger and then made it into a successful career, what the transition felt like for you in terms of being the fat one in the room. Like, are you always the only fat one? Do you feel like you have to address it every time you walk in? Like, does it feel like college still? Like, what's it like?
That's so funny. Well, you know what? Weirdly, I'm not always the fat person in the room. I think maybe I am right now in a very... specific way, but when I started at Full Frontal, Ashley Nicole Black was there.
Love her.
And that's a beautiful guiding light. And then at SNL, 80 was there. So there were fat role models all around in my life. But yeah, so I had a full career in a job next door to the job. I worked in standards and practices, which is like the area of TV where they press the button if someone says a curse word on air. And that I did it for years.
Oh my God.
And I still wanted to be a writer. I still wanted to be creative, but that was my way of being creative in a weird way. Like, one of the jobs that you do is you watch a lot of TV there and you read a lot of scripts. And so if something passed my desk that you couldn't do on TV, or that we had rules to say, oh, you can't say that, then I would come back and say, oh, you can say this instead. So in a very small, tiny way, I
felt like it was contributing.
A small creative thing.
Yes.
But, very quickly you get upset by being close to the thing that you want to be doing, but not there. And my husband and I, after losing our dads, we lost our dads within a short period of time, but we went through this period of like grief and also realizing that life is very short and what are we doing? Why are we doing this like very safe thing? Let's try. So we started taking classes at UCB and did the whole sketch improv thing there. So I definitely had to like go against my comfort zone, but I learned to love it. And it was also, man, I think I got really comfortable with my body really fast by performing.
You have
sketch.
To on stage. Yeah,
you do. And like, I learned how funny and how many laughs you could get by just using your body.
Totally.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly like after, it would be the funniest thing, like after shows, sometimes if we would be like performing at festivals or whatever, we would always have someone come up to us and say, God, you're so brave.
Oh,
and like
God.
Truly, like the braveness was just being a fat body on stage.
I hate that.
I hate it too, but I always laughed. I always found it to be the funniest thing in the world because I knew I could see through what it was.
Did you ever respond or be like, why?
I never did. I just like would knowingly look at, my director at the time, Aaron Burdett, who was a former fat person. So he knew what it was. Then Jason, my husband, obviously knew what it was. He is a fat guy too. But yeah, it's very funny. So like I performed with Bridget Tunnell. I had a show at UCB about the experience of losing my dad, which was called The Dead Dad's Club. And so that was a brave performance.
Yeah.
Because it was raw. And so when people would call me brave after that, I would like,
okay.
It could be because I'm digging into that. I don't know which brave you're talking about, like being existing while fat or dealing with like grief, but either way. And then in 2016, I got hired for SNL. And that was the dream. Like as a child, like I was so excited to get there. And like also like full of trepidation. I knew all of the stories as well. Like I knew all of that too. And so when we talk about like fatness there, I don't think that SNL is the place for body acceptance. Really, I can't say that. It definitely isn't. And the stories, but I did find like the head writers at the time, Chris Kelly and Sarah Schneider, were very encouraging of exploring that. I do remember there's such a funny thing on like your first day. When you pitch to the host, everyone sits on the floor in Lauren's office. And my God, being a fat girl in her 30s, the last thing you want to do is sit crisscross applesauce.
Absolutely not.
On the floor in a very crowded room. Like it's super, super crowded. You are knee to knee with everyone. And the first year writers, what they do is you have to wait for everyone else to take their places because everyone has their seat. Everyone has their spot. And so as a newbie, you go to like where you fit and you wait until everyone's done, which is very weird, but that is just the culture. It's just what it is. And I was nervous about that because I was like, where am I going to put my body in the space? And I walked in and I saw like just like a bright shining little spot on the floor and I plopped in it. And it turned out I later found out that that was where AD sat. So AD had graduated to a couch. And so she had left the perfect hole for my butt.
Oh my God.
Which is ridiculous.
But oh my God.
Those are the weird things that you have anxiety about, right? Like,
of course. Yeah. That's exactly what I mean when I'm talking about like comedy world specifically. There's so many weird things like that.
Totally.
That are like traditions or this or that. Or like it's very ripe for that kind of situation because it's like less professional, I guess, is
completely.
That's not like the best way to say it, but you know what I mean.
It's far less sensitive, I think, than
there's
far fewer people are afraid of like an HR nightmare, I think.
Yes.
So that's what it attracts people like that, I think. And I don't think anyone really, I don't think Lorne Michaels has ever thought, I need to make sure that the people who work here feel comfortable.
No, I don't think that's his reputation at all.
I mean, I'm not going to say that. Yeah, I don't think that that's like on top of mind for a lot of people.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the things that I felt uncomfortable doing. And like, and, you know, you're nervous to be there at all. Like, you don't want to get fired. You're scared to death in the first place. And then and then also to feel like weird in your body. That's not great either.
Yeah.
But I did get to write about body image at that show. So I wrote a sketch called Chonk there.
Yes, and I love Chonk. Yeah. Let's play a clip from it right here.
Beautiful, strong, gorgeous at any size. You're a woman, and you deserve clothes that fit and flatter. You are confident.
So confident.
Prove them wrong. You rock it.
I rock it.
You rule the world.
Hell yes, I do.
That's why you shop at Chonk. We know what women want. You want to be glamorous. We know not every woman's a runway model. That's why Chonk offers sizes 2 to 28. You're a queen. You're a goddess. You're Chonk.
Head to toe Chonk.
No matter what size you are, you'll still feel Chonk.
Okay, so the premise of Chonk is just the terrible names that inclusive stores for women have. Like,
it's a dress barn.
It's a dress barn. It's Torrid.
Yes.
It's everything. It's everything. It's I love this sketch. Tell me about the making of Chonk.
So Chonk came about purely from those like bodily woes. So there's something at SNL, there's a culture where you dress up on Saturdays.
It just seems like such a college group. Like it literally just seems like
I know
a college group.
It is. It 100% is. But and that's another source of anxiety because, I mean, men can wear, you know, dress pants and a button-up shirt. Women have to wear dresses. They don't have to, but it's definitely that's the culture that is created.
That's the vibe.
And you don't want to stand out in any way. And those dresses typically are black dresses. So when you're first starting, like, you're looking for the perfect black dress that you can also run around and sweat in all day because you wear it from morning until very late at night and you're working and you're running around and delivering lines and changing cue cards and all that stuff. So you need something that won't chafe you.
Yes.
It is a perfect storm of things.
I won't ride up and it'll be covering everything and you won't have to.
You got to be able to sit in the floor in it. You got to, you know, whatever. And so that's its own challenge. Preferably with pockets. So I've definitely amassed a selection of these runnable, perfect, exercisable black dresses. And one day I was in my office and Julio Torres was there and he was watching me shop. I was shopping in Eloquy and he said, what kind of a name is Eloquy? And I was like, well, at least it's better than Chonk. And he was like, oh, you should write that sketch. And I was like, okay, I will. And so that was how that happened. And also wanting to like sort of make a joke of the empowering way that people speak to you that is not at all empowering, you know?
Absolutely. It's like pitch perfect the way that the the messaging is, because it's so true. It's like, I mean, and the funny thing about Chonk is that it'll be like, it's like many things in for fat people, which is like anybody who's fat who's watching that will get so much more out of it than somebody who's thin, but also it's funny for thin people. You know what I mean?
Thank you. I hope so. Yeah. And of course, like, you know, for the show, like we had to feature a lot of different body types. And so we made this like very inclusive sizing 0 to 28.
And yes, and like that's unrealistic.
It's completely unrealistic. I would love a chonk, yes. Honestly.
For real.
I want a chonk. But yeah, like I think everyone, like of all, like so many body types, they felt that hardcore, like that, you know, I know that Vanessa Bayer did and I know that Leslie Jones did. Like we have like a full wardrobe team that are so incredible. We were talking through the costuming and like we didn't ever want people to look bad. Like we wanted them to look great. Like all of the clothes look great. Like they look fantastic, yeah. and right for each person. But the conversation is what is so humiliating. Like,
yes.
Yeah. That's
absolutely. Yeah. It's like for you, for your curves. It's like my most hated phrase.
It's awful. Yeah. But I feel like I got one over on SNL by being able to write about that because I don't think that they do a lot of like, you know, body image stuff there.
When I first watched it, I remember watching it suspiciously because I was like, is this, where is this going? Because I
is this making fun of people? Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I know that some of the comments at first, like I definitely checked the YouTube and they were like, this is mean. And I was like, yeah, it's fair for you to think this is mean because you don't know where it's coming from. But hopefully people got that it was making fun of a thing that we are all stuck inside of as opposed to
absolutely
a body.
Yes. Were there other opportunities where you got to write with or for 80? Like writing for other fat people is like a really cool thing, seems like.
It definitely is. Yeah, I definitely wrote for 80. I wrote honestly more for Sashir Zameda. I love her too. And we kind of like paired off very early. That's sort of what happens at SNL. You look for the people who are willing to have you.
Yep.
And so Sashir was willing to have me, which was really great. But it was amazing to write about those things that felt so personal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
That felt good.
I love that. Oh, amazing.
The experiences that I had at SNL were really, really incredible. And I worked with like, oh my God, I'll tell you one thing. I got to write the monologue for Octavia Spencer. So, and
oh my God.
Dream come true to be here. No, really. I've spent the last 4 months of my life at award shows, doing interviews, and walking red carpets. So this is my first real night out of my Spanx. I'm just kidding. I'm still wearing Spanx.
Oh, you know what? And I root for Bobby Moynihan, too. Now I'm walking down.
Oh, my God.
So actually, I did. And Bobby, we did this thing with Nick Kocher and Brian McElhaney, and we wrote this sketch where he played like a doofy lawyer. This Broderick and Gans is what it was called. And he is so physically funny. Like, he does such funny things with his body as well. So it was a joy to write for him in that way. And then I wrote the monologue for Octavia Spencer, and she came in and complimented what I was wearing. And that was like, oh, that'll never happen. Like, that'll never happen again, you know? I was so thrilled to like see her, you know, and talk, like we talked and like got it. And like, I talked about like her, like fashion choices, like, and that was a really great thing to do.
That's so cool.
It's great to write for big people, right?
Yeah, that's it totally so is. Fun. I love Bobby Moynihan.
Oh my God, he's so funny.
I think Bobby Moynihan does a great job of like embodying a fat character who is goofy and klutzy, but like you don't think he's an idiot. Do you know what I mean? Like he's like playing up his physicality without being mean to himself.
100%. There's like a sweetness and like,
yeah,
I love him so much. He's so talented, so funny.
Okay, so then you went from SNL to Full Frontal. Did you just go directly there?
I did. So SNL ended 2018. Yeah, and I started at Sam B in the end of May. So I met with Sam, and Melinda Todd was the head writer over there. And I wanted to work with women. That was something that had definitely become clear and true. And I also wanted a happier life. Like that is, you know, I think I wanted to be able to go to bed at night at a decent time.
Yeah.
So I met Sam and it was like, oh shit, I want to work with you so badly. You're so great. She had liked the portfolio of things that we had sent over from SNL. And And I think Ashley is the one who brought me over there because I was hosting a show called FOMO Live at the time at Union Hall in the city. And we would just invite people to come and show Instagrams that looked like they were having the best time of their lives. And then they told the real truth behind it.
Oh my God, that's so fun. What a good idea.
Thank you. And Ashley came and told a story. And it was the funniest story where she talked about being at the Women's March in 2017. And there's a picture of her looking like noble and brave and powerful. And she was so miserable of the crowd. She was cold and stressed out and wanted to go home.
Oh my God. I had a panic attack at the Women's March.
Yeah.
It was too stressful.
A lot of people.
We were in downtown LA and we didn't move for like 2 hours and I couldn't see above anyone. I'd pee.
Yeah.
We weren't moving. It was stressful. Yeah, I get it.
That's very similar to what Ashley went through. And it's just so funny to just be honest, to be like, here's this beautiful Instagram protest image and here's the truth of how I felt at the time.
Incredible.
But she learned there that I wasn't working at a cell, and I think she broke that back to like everyone that she worked with. And so they brought me in. And yeah, I went and met with Sam at a coffee shop and we just hit it off and we talked about how much we don't like space.
I hate space. Oh my God.
I do too, man. And that's literally what we talked about in my interview.
I'm so glad we're on the same page about this.
And so is she. Like, it was just a very funny conversation. And when it kind of got down to it, I realized that I was in a position to be very picky about what I wanted. I'll tell you about this. Like, I had gotten sides for Britney Runs a Marathon. I don't know if you'd watch that. Did you?
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I saw many trailers forced down my throat for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got the sides for that right before going to my first Emmys. And the part that I was given to audition for was a woman who is just berated for being fat by the lead character, by Brittany. And she doesn't really get to say anything for pages. And finally, she forgives that person for calling her fat because she knows that it's coming from a place of self-hatred. And I remember getting those sides and I like wrote back to my manager and said, no, I don't want to do this. Like, this isn't what I want to do. I'm happy to do comedy about being fat, but I don't want it to be where fat is bad. And I don't want to be like, my God, she only gets to like graciously forgive someone for being hateful to her. No, that's not what I want to do. And so that maybe started a moment of like, I know what I want to do and I'm not going to do things that I don't want to do. And at this moment, I can be picky. There will be moments in my life where I cannot be picky and I have to take whatever I get. But right now I can be a little picky. And so I said to Sam that I wasn't really a political comedy person, which I wasn't. I wrote a lot of characters, a lot of silly stuff, a lot of jokes. And so I wanted her to be completely forthcoming about that. And that was fine. They needed a joke writer. They had a lot of policy wonks at the time who were like amazing activists who knew exactly what they were talking about. And then they needed some stupid people in there too. It's a beautiful mix. And so I was honest with her. And I think that that was also a really amazing, freeing thing to be like, this is exactly who I am. So when I get in there, I don't have to be afraid. I'm not overpromising. I'm saying exactly who I am. And that's what you're going to get. So that kind of was the tone of the rest of Full Frontal. Like day one, I was never afraid. Like I never felt uncomfortable. I never worried about my presence there. I was always welcomed. It was a very different scenario. So no, I never had any feelings about being the fat person in the room. You know, I feel
that there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also can like advocate for myself there, which is really lovely. Like, very silly things, but like wanting the right office chair. Like you can. Like,
oh, that's not silly at all. That's important.
Well, it is important, right? But like, I think at another place, I might be afraid to, maybe not anymore, honestly, but at that time, I might have been afraid to be like, I need a better chair that is more supportive for me and my body.
Yeah.
But at this job, I could very quickly say, this chair is not going to work for me. And the production coordinator, like, wonderfully was so thoughtful and was like, yeah. And sent me like a list of chairs to choose from. And like, even those things were like very different. And I hope that we are that welcoming to everyone there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like as I get older, I'm like more willing to advocate for myself.
Yeah.
But also it's really environment dependent. It can be, it doesn't matter if it's a bad environment.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you going to do? Ask for something, then they won't give it to you.
Yeah.
You know, like you can advocate, but it requires the other person meeting you, like this at the show,
totally.
You know?
And also a certain amount of power. So, you know, I was a staff writer and to be able to ask for that was a big deal. Now as a head writer, I feel like I can ask for whatever I need, you know, like.
Sure, sure. You're the head honcho now.
Now you get to like, you know, be pushy or whatever. Not that I hope I'm not. But still, I think like it's just like you grow into your power of being able to get what you need for yourself. And that is an amazing thing.
Here are a couple of my hottest and thickest writers who wrote tonight's piece about fat phobia. They wrote this intro too.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ashley Nicole Black.
And I'm Kristen Bartlett.
We were so excited to write this piece because, hello, it's personal. I've had thin actors look at my plate and say, it's so lucky it doesn't matter what I eat anymore.
They are lucky you didn't stab them with your fork. Last year, I saw a new gynecologist, a man.
Ooh, big mistake.
Huge. So this guy waited till I was bare-assed on the exam table to ask, have you ever considered weight loss surgery? I don't know. Have you ever considered talking to my face instead of my chooch?
No one needs...
So the two things that we are going to do a little clip of here from Full Frontal are your pieces, Thick Not Sick and Fat People Have Heads. Really love them.
Thank you.
Thick Not Sick is like about medical fat phobia.
This is a segment we are calling...
Thick Not Sick.
Asterisk, don't worry, you can laugh. This was written by fat people.
Asterisk, asterisk, the word fat is fine, if you're nice about it.
Here's some shocking news that may change your life. Fat people are just like everyone else.
And Fat People Have Heads is where you and Ashley Nicole Black create some amazing footage for people to use instead of butts and guts shots, which are the headless shots of people walking around.
You know that B-roll of just fat people's bellies when they're trying to run across the street to get away from the news?
Fat people live in fear that we're going to be watching the news and recognize our fupas on a story about how bad fat people are.
So we did something about it. Take a look.
I remember watching that and being like, I can't believe they did this. Like, I was like, I can't believe it happened.
Oh
like,
my
I was
God.
Like,
thank you.
It was big deal. Big deal for me, at least.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, I think that just speaks to Sam. So that pitch came from Allie Elkin, who is a producer on the show. And it came after that HuffPo article about medical fatphobia. So
written by Michael Hobbs, who is co-host of Maintenance Phase with Aubrey.
Yeah. So that article had come out and I think it made all of everyone I know feel a million things.
Yes.
And so we started talking about that in the room and I was excited to write about it. Ashley was excited to write about it. And Melinda was the head writer and she let us go off and do that. And it was at the time, shortly thereafter, that Ashley took a job writing and performing on Black Lady Sketch Show.
Yes.
So it was an interesting transition time. And I thought that it wasn't going to happen. And thankfully, like, she got to come back and shoot that with us, which was really, really great.
You guys are such a fun pair. I was like hoping you guys would do more too.
I was sad that she left. Oh my God.
Yeah.
We were neighbors for a couple of years, which is really great. We like literally lived on the same floor.
Oh, that's so nice.
I hope I get to do more things with Ashley because she's incredible. I love
her.
Yeah. I remember when we were talking about it and just like formulating the pitch in the room, you know, in the room with like producers and writers and just everyone, and everyone sort of sharing their thoughts about all of this. And I remember Sam saying, this might be the thing we do that is the most hated because everyone hates fat people.
And that's true. Absolutely.
Like she said that she was, and I know she was nervous for me. Like I know that she was nervous about us not, I mean, Ashley had been on camera, so she wasn't nervous about Ashley because Ashley was a correspondent, but I think she was nervous about me and like how I would feel and if I would like be okay opening myself up to the internet essentially.
Yeah,
and it's true, it absolutely was a thing. Like I'm so proud of it and it was fun to do, and I never felt even slightly bad about any of the negative comments, and in fact it was like I was able to read them and completely divorce myself from the reality of what people were saying. But like there were these like fitness gurus who made videos that were like talk backs who would like work to like, you know, break apart the arguments or whatever. And who have like full videos just answering back to this thing on, I don't know, man.
That's wild.
It's wild. And of course the comments on, there were amazing ones, very kind ones. And then there were like amazingly awful ones talking about my and Ashley's bodies, you know?
Oh God.
And it didn't hurt because I feel like I got so much of a response from that too, from people who were like, thank you. Like, you know, thank you for saying those things. And And it wasn't even that radical. Like, we weren't like, yes. I mean, I think it was like, as you know, like we have a full research team, we have a full fact check team, and they're like amazing at what they do. And they're like, you know, down to the science, like we can say this, we can't say that. Like, what can we stand by? What do we emotionally know is true, and what can we actually say is true?
Yes, that's what was I was thinking when I was looking at, I like rewatched all these things before this, and I was like looking at the YouTube comments, which are always a cesspool on any, it doesn't, I mean, of YouTube course. Comments are like not representative, I don't think, of real people in general, hopefully, because they're just always awful.
It's awful.
But it was interesting to see how many, I was like, yes, as expected, so many people here are like, this is not scientific, this is not scientific. And I was like, what do you think, like, do you think this is just like, what, how do you, I don't know. It's just like, what's the disconnect here? You think they're all like, this is an opinion piece. It's like, it's not.
It's not. And the things that we said, I know, were scientifically based, because I had plenty of things that were opinion that had to be cut out of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's very, I mean, as somebody who knows all this stuff, that was very clear watching it, that it was like just stuff that could be.
Yeah.
Cited and backed up. 100%. And like, there's this one line where Sam says, like, talking about somebody's illness is being missed because they're fat, and she's like, some of like bad outcome, you know, I just like, can be attributed to that. I was like, yeah, they're being really careful. Like, I clocked that.
And yeah, absolutely, we had to add those sums, we had to add maybes, we had to add the mites and all of that stuff too.
Yep.
But like, you know, so it wasn't that radical compared to, like, I think the health at any size movement in general. Like, I think it was what we could scientifically say. I think it's upsetting to people to say these things when they have built their entire lives on why their bodies are better than other bodies. So to break that down in any way is a challenge that could suggest that they are not better.
Yes, 100%.
And so that's where that breakdown comes from. But I also think it meant a lot of people. I think that people liked it. And, you know, we did... The Fat People Have Heads thing was just like a fun little sketch that we did on top of it, where Ashley and I got to feel glamorous. Now, we had a lot of comments on that where people were saying, like, why did you include men who were like muscular, like had like fit bodies? And you know what? We shouldn't have. Like, that was like, that's like good. I mean, it's maybe funnier for the joke, the immediate joke, but like, we should have included men's bodies as well. Like, that was like very good critique. So yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love that. Love that. Well, what was it like after doing that? Did you kind of feel like, okay, I've done the thing I want to do about this? Do you feel like you have more you want to say about fatness on TV? Like,
oh my gosh.
Do you include it in your writing in the future? What's your vibe?
I definitely want to. I don't know what my story is yet about it. You know, like, you know what? I love Dairy Girls. Like, I love Dairy Girls. I love the movie Spy. Like, I love seeing big women and big people playing things that aren't about their weight. And I think, yeah, so that's what I hope I'm making. Like, I hope I get to make something where you just see, like, different body sizes. And it's just not about that. It's not about... And also every other group. Yeah, just not about their own marginalization. That's what that's what I dream of.
Yes. That's a really good way to put it. I mean, that encapsulates it all, doesn't it?
Right? Yeah. So that's what I hope. But I know I have fat stories in there, so I do want to tell them. But I don't know what it is just yet. I write a lot about grief because that is sort of the story of my life. I mean, my God, like, just like growing up as a fat person, like what that's like and how you have to adopt. I think I adopted like more of a powerful personality as a response to feeling insecure about my body and like, or people, it's not some bullying, but like, my God, I remember like in the eighth grade, I was invited to a pool party. And the reason I was invited to a pool party was because that way the woman who was inviting me, the young lady, would have someone a little fatter than her.
So that she was the thinner one.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And like, I didn't, you know, these were my friend. And so I was invited to this party. And then later a friend of mine said that this is what he heard. And I've walked away, you know, always knowing that, you know, oh God. And so it's just like the daily ways that we are made to feel less than because of our bodies, never getting cast. I know that, like, I was maligned. Like, my career took longer to get to because of how I was treated in high school theater. Because you're not cast in a lead role. You're always the ensemble.
You know, no, you're allowed to be. I was cast as like nurse, assistant, lady who screams, mm-hmm. like mom, grandma.
Oh, you're always the mom. Like,
always the mom. It's not acceptable for fat people to be the protagonist because then you'd have to be sexy. But you can be fat and a mom. You That's acceptable.
Can. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so I think what you walk away with from that is not. It's not, I'm not getting this because I'm fat. You're getting, you walk away by thinking, I'm not getting this because I'm not good enough. And so.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so it takes a decade or more, if you're lucky, to undo all of that.
Yeah.
And the way that, yeah. completely. And the way that I was able to undo that was by making my own stuff. And so I think that's like the lesson over and over again is like, if I get turned away for whatever reason, it's like, well, fuck you. I'm going to do my own thing.
Yes.
And then I end up being happier and I control it and I'm able to own every part of it. And that's much more satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we did the podcast for yes, sure.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
And that helps yeah, people.
Exactly.
You know?
I hope so. I hope so.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you have been in writers' rooms, have you ever, so this is like very much based on my experience in writers' groups mm-hmm. and college and taking UCB classes.
Sure.
Are you the kind of person who was the killjoy? Because I was the killjoy for things that I thought were offensive. And a lot of them were fat jokes sometimes. Were you ever put in that position of being like, this is not funny. Like, this is about someone in a bad way. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But not so much in my own sketch teams ever. Like, that wasn't because it's that control thing. Because you pick the people that you love. Like, you end up being able to, like, trust whatever they're going to come up with.
Sure.
But definitely at SNL, I was certainly the killjoy. And also, like, I think other people have been the killjoy for me. Like, you'll say something and you think, God, there's someone else who knows a little bit more about things than you. Yeah.
I want someone to do that for my bad ideas. The problem is when so you do that and someone else acts like you were like being annoying or whatever. You're like, okay, you want to do something racist? Like, I guess, go ahead. Like, what?
Oh my God. Yeah. You need to be able to have a conversation. And sometimes people don't know. Ooh, here's some advice for the world.
Yes.
If you have a problem with something. If you identify that something is racist or sexist or ableist or whatever, any of the is, you need to say, I am concerned or I have an issue about this line or thing because of this. Say it out there. A lot of people, when they're coming up and don't know what to do yet, will say, does anyone else have a problem with blank? And if you say that and no one else in the room has a problem with it, then you move on. The room moves on and this person feels unheard and like they were ignored, but you were listened to, but no one else had an issue and you didn't like stake your claim. And so that is as a head writer.
Yeah.
That's a thing that like I really try to listen for and I try to encourage people to like deliver their notes, like explain your note and say your note, because sometimes people give notes and they're just like, right, they're not on, you know, that's going to happen too. Like sometimes like something will, you know, bump someone in a certain way. That's just really lighting something up personally for them. That isn't how the world will feel, you know? That's a real thing.
Yes.
And that it's also a thing that would
for sure
maybe happen more often in a room like at Full Frontal, where there are people who are journalists, there are people who are activists who aren't there for the comedy necessarily. And it takes both. It takes both to get to do that show.
Yeah.
But that is a thing where that can happen more. So I think people need to raise their concerns in a way that really like is honest and shows how they feel and isn't like meek. It's asking a lot, but it is. It yeah, helps.
It's always hard, especially if you're not sure what the reaction will be, or if you're not even. Sometimes people can ask it that way because they might not even be totally sure. You know, also, which is like, especially I felt that way before in. It, when the joke is something that I'm like, I think this is offensive, but not to my people. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm like, am I an ex? I'm not an expert on this. I don't know, blah, blah. But I think you're totally right because being the killjoy is, I'm used to it now. I don't really care anymore. But at the time or like in the past, I would have felt like, well, I don't want to be wrong about this. But it's like, who cares if you're wrong about this? You put up the issue and you're trying to save people from being whatever ism, you know, like that's a good thing. And then if you decide not to, then that's fine too.
Yeah,
you know,
completely. I think even phrasing it that way is great too. Is saying like, this isn't personally offend me, but I worry that this could offend XYZ or this could, people could take it this way. And that is a great note because then you sit and you think about it for a second and you decide if you want to do it or not.
Yeah.
And also things are permanently changing, you know, like.
Totally. Things that were okay a couple years ago are not okay now anymore.
And
like,
completely.
And not in a like in the old days way, just like we're making progress kind
in
of way.
In this cancel culture way.
Yeah. One thing about comedy that I've always tried to talk about, it, like with my friends in comedy and that I was frustrated by is that having taken on this killjoy role, a lot of times when I'd be like, I'm not doing that on stage, you know, like I'm not fucking doing that. Where that's not cool or whatever. And then I'm seen as like the killjoy one. But like, I actually think there are so many funny jokes to be made about being fat.
Yeah.
They just don't get made. I'm like, make a funny joke then. I'll do the funny one, you know?
Yeah. I think that like, honestly, like I think there's a reason that Ashley and I wrote that piece. It's because we felt the authority to be able to make the jokes that we needed to make. Sometimes I will write a fat joke in the show and we will just sit there and be like, oh, Sam cannot say that. Like a thin woman of privilege who, you know, is, you know, is like traditionally beautiful.
It'll come off weird.
That would be hateful, but I can say that.
Yeah.
Anyone else can say that. So that is a thing.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a thing too. I don't know, man. I think that there's a lot of comedy that comes from it. It's funny to see what people will laugh at. When I was doing FOMO, like I would definitely talk about my body a lot. Because one of the photos that I would share would be from my first Emmys. And so I would be talking about like, you know, I looked great. I really did. But I would talk about like all of the work that goes into being a fat person on the red carpet.
Yes.
And there's so much. There's so much work.
Yes.
And sometimes people would feel uncomfortable laughing at that. Like they would because they don't want to be hurtful, you know. And I would.
Of course.
And it's like I'm able to say this. You can laugh. It's okay. I would never really notice like if it ever made people uncomfortable. But I remember Nicole Byer did my show in LA and she came up afterwards and we were talking a little bit about it. And she was like, some of those jokes are really funny. And she's like, I think people have a harder time laughing at women talking or making fat jokes and talking about their bodies than men. And she compared it to like a man performer, a male performer, a friend of ours who can really use his body as to mine it for comedy. And I think that's absolutely true. So you never know what people are nervous. And that's fair.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, I haven't been on stage in a while. Well, certainly not in like over, you know, a while because they don't. But like also a little bit before that. But I remember noticing that. And you know, my stages are nowhere near the SNL stages. But I do like fun little things. But I've always noticed that bigger guys, there was like a bigger guy I performed with for a while who could get more laughs from taking up space than I could.
Totally.
And that would always bug me because I knew it had more to do with how the audience saw me than it did with the work I was doing.
Completely. It's also, it's more, you know, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt too. I think it's more acceptable because they've been seeing fat, funny fat men for a very long time.
Yes.
So they can see, you know, Chris Farley doing that Chippendale sketch. They've seen someone use their body in that way, even though like he obviously had his own feelings about doing that sketch. But like,
yes,
but I think like people are more trained to see that. Melissa McCarthy was maybe the first, right? Mm-hmm. Who like used her body physically in that way and to such great power.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more we're not thinking of, but she's definitely a big one of the last several years for sure. Yeah. And like making that more acceptable because, well, I mean, the bottom of it is people don't want to laugh at something that they feel like is sad or bad. And if they think that you're sad for being fat, they're not going to laugh at it. And it's like, well, I don't think it's sad. So that's your problem.
That's on you. I know, man.
Yeah.
I think that's totally true. I can see that being the case with my husband too. Like, you know, he would do a sketch where if his shirt comes off, then the world is laughing and take that however you want. But like, you know, I know that if I did sketches where I was playing like a very sexual character, like that like was such a funny moment when I made people laugh because of that. It was almost like they were laughing in spite of themselves. That was a thing that happened too.
Yeah. It's an interesting feeling when you're like not quite sure what they're laughing at or why or like how, you know, it's wild.
It totally is. I kind of don't care. I'm like, whatever. Like, as long as you're laughing, it's fine. But yeah, that's absolutely true.
Is there a good fat joke that you like that's out in the world? What's your favorite fat joke?
Oh, my God. I don't know. Oh, you know what? I think just talking about people's bodies like and the things that we have to deal with is so funny. This is not by no means a joke, but it's a funny thing that happened. I was pitching Todd Phillips on a movie a few years ago, which is very weird, but that's what happens in the world. So Todd Phillips of Hangover fame, Joker fame.
Yes.
But I was pitching comedy to him, and one of the characters ends up getting like horrifically third degree burn chafing, like in a, like just,
oh my God.
And it's like a super awful day at the water park. And so I said that, and
that's a funny joke. That'd be a funny scene.
You know what? I'm going to put it somewhere else. So there you go. And he did not know what chafing was. So I pitched this to him.
Sorry?
No, I know. And I said, I don't care. This is going in the podcast. It's fine. When am I going to work with Todd Phillips? I don't know. But yeah, I made this and I waited for the laugh because every time I'd practiced it, it got a laugh. And nothing happened. And I was like, so this person is chafed really badly. And he was like, I don't understand what that means. And I was like, it's when two thighs rub together. And if you're wet, if there's any wetness involved, it's going to be really worse. And what happens is there's like a huge like rash irritation that's very painful. And he sat in complete and total like disbelief that that was a thing that could happen to a body.
Oh, my God. Imagine not even knowing of the existence of chafing.
Something that I worry about constantly every summer. I think about.
Like, truly a different existence, like a different planet.
Like the time.
Oh, my God.
I walked away thinking about the time and effort that I spend on looking for the perfect kind of slip short.
Yes.
And who I would
absolutely.
Be. Yeah, who I would be if I had that time back. Like, what kind of thing would I have accomplished by now?
God, he didn't even get to the follow-up joke about having to do the waddle to get out.
That's when the thing, when you walk like, yes. Like a full split.
It's very, because what else are you supposed to do? It fucking hurts.
Oh my God. Jesus
that
Christ.
That is so funny. Wow. I really want you to get that joke in somewhere else.
Put it somewhere else. Yeah.
You don't have to be fat to have thigh chafing, by the way.
Completely not. Like, I don't know. Like, that's like a special body that he must have to never have experienced that.
Like, okay. Like, congrats, I guess. Your legs are very wide set, sir.
That's the only perk of thigh gap, you know, is to not have them. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that I think about fatness that is so funny. And that's why I love, like, that part I love talking about because, you know, that maybe would have been too embarrassing for me to even acknowledge when I was 16 years old.
Yes.
When your body should be perfect and never, never be gross in any way.
Yes.
Or painful. So like that is something that I really like relish in now because I find when I talk about stuff like that, when I talk about like sweating, like it's only endearing and it's fine. Like,
yeah.
When I was taking a meeting in LA with someone who I dearly love now and has gone on to be one of the producers on the show that I was pitching last year. I had to walk across a lot because I do not drive, by the way. That is the thing.
I
do not drive.
New York thing. Big New York vibes.
I'm presenting them and it's more about my own inability to properly like react. But I'm going to, yeah, it's tough New York vibes. I do not drive, and I'm out of concern for everyone else. I won't. But I had to walk across a lot, and I arrive right before my meeting, and I'm like 10 minutes early. And that's so that I can give myself time to like stop being red and also.
And like cool down. Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yes,
yeah.
And to take a blotting paper and give myself like a good once over. And yeah. I arrived, I was like down the hall, like in a corner. I had the perfect place to blot my face. And yes. The person who I was meeting with was coming out of the hallway when I was doing that. And he saw me and I was like, oh, I'm just blotting my face. And he like kind of chuckled and like went off on his own. And then we went to the meeting and I brought it up and he had no idea what blotting was. He didn't know what blotting papers were.
Oh my God.
So I used the meeting to like pull out my Tatcha blotting papers and show him like, it's a special paper you use to take away the sweat that happens above your nose or like below your nose.
Without fucking up your makeup. Yeah.
And he was thrilled, and unlike Todd Phillips, I think he enjoyed that specific thing that happened to your body, and then we went on to work together.
That is so funny. I mean,
yeah,
I those moments are wild. Just like realizing someone else has never thought about this thing that you think about. One of my terrible unpaid internships was on the Universal lot, mm-hmm. and I had to walk every day from the parking lot to the office.
Beautiful.
And I also was like very hot and sweaty by the time I got there. And I would pause every day by the big Minion statues just to be like, whew. And then I could like calm down for a second, then turn the corner and go in. But every single day I did that. And like the Universal lot tours would go by me and I'd be like, like,
there's so much. And so that's my delight, like in meeting another fat person who goes to that shit too. Like, I can't remember who, one of the improvisers here who like, who I was like hanging out with like a big crew, and everyone decided to go walking somewhere and walk from point A to point B. And this person was like, no, I am taking a cab, and it is only three blocks. It is a perfectly fine distance. And one of my other friends said that she is comfortable walking somewhere, but like, let her walk on her own. Like, she doesn't want to walk with you. Your speed is different from her speed. Like, it's okay. Like, I'm going to get there, but like, let me get there when I get there.
Ugh. Yes.
I delight
very
in,
much yes, so.
I delight in that.
I have had many, many nights where I wished I would have just taken an Uber somewhere because I got blisters or the thigh chafing or whatever. No. Like, you know what? I don't even care. I'm just going to take the Uber now. Who cares?
That's where I am right now, too. I feel like I've earned the right to take the Uber. Sorry.
You know, I don't. What am I proving? Nothing. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I no longer care.
Sometimes like if like. And none of this applied this past year. So this is not a real, like, these are not.
Oh, yes.
No longer the same anxieties. But truly, like, if we would have, like, a group outing, you know, 20 minutes away or whatever, I would be like, I'm walking myself. I'm leaving 10 minutes early. I will show up at the same time that you guys do. But I'm walking on a different block.
I also don't like walking with people. Well, partly also because I've even regardless of weight, because I go up and, you know, I've gone up and down as all fat people have through their life.
Yeah.
Regardless of weight, I'm shorter than my mom and my sister, and they both are always walking fully ahead of me.
No, it's not okay.
So like I'm used to being that I'm like, hey, guys, wait up.
It's not okay.
I'm like, slow down.
Yeah, I think of that at the Emmys, too. Like, it's fun being a fat person on the red carpet, too. Like. They're not expecting you.
Yeah.
They're not expecting you. And it's a joy. Like, I think more and more fat people are getting that experience now. Like, there are more, like, fat actors who are – you're going to see them. And that's a beautiful thing. And I think, like, at first I felt such anxiety because it's so hard. You can't go and find a dress. Like, that's not a thing that you're able to do. So, like, you hire a stylist, which is a very – bananas thing as a writer to be doing. And at first I felt such anxiety around that. Like, how am I going to look? Like, I worry about that too. And I remember like the first year that I went, I worked with a straight size stylist who had worked with plus size actresses. She did costumes wardrobe for difficult people. So she had worked with Gabby Sidibe and Shekinah Nafax, so she had worked with different bodies.
Yeah.
So that was good, but it's still different. Like, it's still different from working with a plus size designer. And so then most recently I worked with Kat Eaves, who,
Oh, yeah, I know Kat
Eaves. She's wonderful. And so she helped style me for the last Emmys that existed in real life. And then Christy Cedar Thompson made that dress. So that was the first year that I had a custom dress made for me. And I think I never can go back. Like,
yeah,
because then I it came down to being able to ask for what you need. Like, I was able to say, no, I don't want to wear something form fitting. Yes, I want to have an A-line dress. Yes, I want to have this color. Yes, I want to feel like this. And I wore like the lightest possible spank beneath it.
Yeah.
I didn't. And the previous year I'd worn double spanks that were just like holding me in for dear life. And it was a beautiful thing to be able to say, I don't want to have to do that. And I felt so confident on the red carpet. And I'm not famous, but I was able to, like, as you're walking in front of like this collection of photographers, if you follow like a celebrity, I like walked and they kind of looked my way. And and then I just said, I was like, hi, I'm Kristen. You don't know me yet, but you will. And they got a kick out of that. And so I got a lot of, it was fun. So I got to have like my photo taken, and that appeared in a lot of places, which was really lovely. Like,
that's really fun.
It was nice. Like, my photo was in Vogue, and on Jezebel, I was like on a dress list or whatever. And so, like, I think that more.
You have to send us that picture so we can post it for the app. Yeah.
I will. But, like, more and more, I think people are willing to showcase fat bodies in that way. And I'm excited for that.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay. Before we wrap up, well, first, can I tell you what I want Sam B to cover with you?
Please. Give me the topic that you need.
Okay. I'm desperate for somebody to do something about the upcoming nightmare tsunami of weight loss we're about to head into post-pandemic.
That's totally coming. I think that's a very smart idea. We always want to talk about wellness. Like, I think that that's something that we always want to examine. And we've done a few segments on the wellness industry. And I think that it's time to go back into the world for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. So if I steal it, I'm so sorry that you don't get credit. I apologize. You can complain to the WGA about this.
It's a free idea. I give it to you freely.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I have been so excited to talk to you. It's maybe weird to say this, but I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You've done so many cool things, and I'm excited to see what comes next for you. And I want all of the family to follow you on your socials. We'll put them in the show notes and support your stuff and watch Sam B. Support Sam B because we love Sam B.
Thank you so much.
This season, we're doing a big sister mailbag for our patrons every Friday.
We're answering questions like, what are the quirkiest / most fun jobs that you've worked?
Oh my God. I don't think jobs are fun ever, but I did a couple weird unpaid internships that were pretty fun. For a while, I did an unpaid internship at Soul Pancake when their big thing was kid president. And I got like help out with a couple kid president shoots. That was kind of fun.
That's cute.
Other than that, I would say my most fun job was when I babysat in high school. I had like a family that I would go babysit every weekend. And I loved it because I really love their kids. I was just looking on Facebook this morning. I'm Facebook friends with the parents. And their oldest daughter just graduated from college today, which is crazy. But like, I used to babysit for these three cute kids. And then I would put them to bed, and they had like all the TV. So I remember watching a lot of Degrassi TNG, and also they like let me record movies to watch on their recorder thing. So it was awesome. I loved it. It was fun.
I used to love babysitting for parents that would just be like, I've bought pizza. Their bedtime is at 8. Just put on a movie and then put them to bed.
This mom would keep like bags of chocolate chips in the pantry to have as like a sweet snack. And I would go in, get some popcorn and get some chocolate chips.
It was great.
What are some of the quirky fun jobs that you've had?
Definitely the kind of like most out there job is that I worked as a tour guide at this place called African Lion Safari, which is in Ontario, where I live in Canada. And they're like a breeding conservation place for like wild animals. So it's one of those places where you have to like be in your car and drive around in reserves while stuff is around you.
Oh my God.
So I had to learn how to drive the huge like 50 people, like school bus size buses, which was a cool experience. And like I learned how to drive like a little boat and like a little train that they had. And it was really cool. I did not like the customer service side of it because people with like families and kids and like huge school groups were like really difficult to I don't know, just manage a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But there like so many cool things happened while I was on that job. Like I saw they had a baby giraffe at the time. So I saw like this baby giraffe walk around every day, which was just so cool. Or like I would literally be face to face with like a giraffe that would come up and like lick the driver's window of the huge tour bus. Or I like saw a baby deer like take its first steps literally like in this reserve.
Oh my God, that's cool.
Yeah. It was like,
that is cool.
By the end of the summer, it was a summer job. So by the end of the summer, I really hated it because it was mostly just cleaning the tour buses. Like I would give two tours and then clean everything, essentially. But I'm really glad I did it because it was very cool.
That is a cool job. Yeah. Wow. That is a quirky, fun job. My most quirky job I can't talk about because I signed an NDA, but I'll tell you when we're not recording.
Okay. If you liked hearing us big sisters answer your questions, join our Patreon at Team Paisley Moo Moo or above to hear full minisodes every Friday.
And that's the episode. Shout out to Stylish Sista, where you can get the only SAF stickers on the market.
You can find the All Bodies Are Good Bodies collab at stylishsista.etsy.com for a limited time. And I can't recommend enough that you do.
How else will you meet other family members in the wild? I've got them on my hydro flask.
Remember that we have a voicemail box at 213-375-5023, and we want to hear from you.
You can call in with questions or comments, and we might even play your message on the pod.
As always, shout out to our patrons. Thank you to
Alyssa,
Lauren,
Bay,
Lane Harris,
Mary Ingram,
Flux underscore Undone,
Ashley Newhouse,
Allison Howard,
Natalie Strong,
and Haya Hussein.
We couldn't make the show without you.
Bye.
Bye. She's All Fat was created by me, Sophie Carter Khan, and April K. Cuillo, who graduated. We are an independent production. If you'd like to support the work we do, you can join our Patreon by visiting patreon.com/she'sallfatpod. When you pledge to be a supporter, you'll get all sorts of goodies and extra content. Please make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's super important in making sure people find the show so we can grow the family. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to the stuff we mentioned today. And don't forget to send us your questions at fyi@she'sallfatpod.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 213-375-5023, and we might even play it on the pod. Our episode ads are done in partnership with Acast. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, you can get started at acast.com. Our theme music was composed and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. Our website was designed by Jesse Fish, and our logo is by Hannah Sanger. Lynn Barbera co-produced and edited this episode. Yelly Cruz is our magical junior producer. Our thin crony forever is Maria Bertel. I'm our host and co-producer. Our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter handles are at She's All Fat Pod. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Stay safe. We love you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.